We're going to make the most interesting commentary. This is A24. They distributed the movie. This is Daniel Scheinert speaking. I'm the director. Go, Dan.
Hi, this is Dan Kwan. This is the other director. Welcome.
That's Cold Iron. They're one of the financiers.
First one to jump on, actually. First crazy one. People.
Tadmore. Some Great. Guy who made his money in the Middle East off real estate or something.
Astrak and Film AB.
Those are our Swedes. Our lovely Swedes.
They gave us Swedish fish when they
came on board.
Yeah, when they came on board for the movie.
And this is one of the very last shots we shot. And it's the first shot you see. We finished the cut of the film, and then we went out and shot all of this intro sequence, which was nice because we kind of rewrote it a bit to try to make it efficient, you know, try to like, oh no, fix some of the things that were confusing folks.
These close-up shots were done in a swimming pool.
This one.
Oh yeah, that one right there.
You can see the stick right there that I'm using to puppeteer it. So I debated fixing that with visual effects and just gave up.
This is one of our wonderful little boat props that our art department built. They built so much stuff out of trash and sticks.
Those boat props did not work. We had to fake it. We literally hung a hammer off the bottom of this one to make it float straight up and down. So there's a hammer under there.
So our movie's inaccurate. If he actually tried to push these out into the ocean, they would immediately just sink.
Flop over and sink.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, this movie's full of
fakeness.
Scientific inaccuracies.
So this is a real island that we didn't do any visual effects on, and we didn't fake, and it's not actually...
I grew up on this island.
Yeah.
This is where I'm from.
Yeah.
I grew up on a little island off the coast of California.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's go to my house.
We made Paul actually live in this cave for like a couple months on his own.
Hidden cameras.
Yeah, just to see what would happen.
Yeah, and he just killed himself.
No.
Or tried to. We stopped
him.
Yeah, he's still out. He's still around. Oh, this commentary sucks so far.
No, this island actually is just a beach that we then converted to an island with some fancy visual effects.
So we just kind of picked a rock face that we really liked that had that kind of, you know, frame to it. So, you know, we just had to pick our shots and try to not see the surrounding shoreline and not see things that would make you immediately say like, oh, that's not an island.
That
gag right there of his feet dangling.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going to describe?
Yeah.
Him doing like a pull-up bar move. Like he's just holding onto a bar and wiggling his feet around. So much fakery.
So much fakery whenever you make a movie. It's all lies. One thing that's not a lie is that's actually just Daniel Radcliffe. Every single shot so far has just been Daniel Radcliffe lying on the beach by himself.
Yeah, it was kind of surreal when you'd start a shoot day and be like, okay, we have a busy day today. We have like 100 setups to get through. In 98 of those setups, Daniel Radcliffe lies there, just lies there. And he never complained. He was, if anything, he would complain when he couldn't do a shot, you know, for scheduling reasons or something. He'd be like, no, it needs to be me. He's a trooper.
Was this shot the pain in the butt where we had to remove the breathing, that wide shot?
The wides were always easier than the closes, like that, like there in the belly.
Right here, yeah. We had to remove some breathing.
Blinks were pretty easy to remove and pretty rare. Daniel did a pretty incredible job. This was hard because the sun was literally shooting into his eye.
Yeah, our DP hates that shot because Paul actually leaves the frame and then he has to chase him, but we kind of love that kind of... That feeling of unpredictability.
And the reveal. You like pan up to Paul and she's like, and he hates farts too.
Yeah.
Like, it was important to us that like the farts don't come off like Looney Tunes farts. That like that Hank despises farts and you realize like, hey, if you hate farts, that's okay. And you know, as an audience member.
Oh, this was shot in our neighborhood.
That's my shirt.
Oh yeah, that's your shirt you gave to Paul. Those are my headphones, I think. We just shot this. It was just like us and our DP. We had to find a way to humanize Hank before all the crazy stuff happened.
We kind of wanted to ground the story up front and just be like, let's give him a gift. Let's let him see that this guy has a real life back home, you know, that's troubling him. So that it was a late in the game thing that we went and shot that bus scene.
Yeah, it was near the end of the edit. It was actually me and Matt, our editor.
Fart sound.
Oh, me and Matt, we were getting frustrated with the movie, and so we got high and we decided, you know what this movie needs? Movie needs a shot of him sitting on a bus looking lonely.
This one was hard, the belly.
Oh, yeah, that's a tough shot.
Because the shadow goes up and over it. But, yeah, so, like, during the edit, we decided, let's go film him on the bus. We thought originally it was a hard, fast rule that we don't do any real flashbacks, that every glimpse of civilization is done as a reenactment in this film. And then it wasn't until the edit that we decided, like, okay, let's break the rule for just this one very specific moment.
Yeah.
If you don't like someone ruining the magic of a movie, just turn off the commentary now, because we're just going to point out all the flaws and tell you all the ways we faked things. So that's a fake beard, yeah. Which is insane. Like, I hate when, like, a beard looks fake in a movie. So I was real terrified when we decided that we had to, you know, for production reasons. Like,
I saw on Twitter someone was like, thank God for Swiss Army Man, because we got to see Paul Dano with a beard. Sexy.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome, ladies.
Exactly.
Paul can't grow a real beard, so it wasn't even an option. Like, yeah. He's just, you know, one of those boys that it kind of grows out patchy. But our makeup team worked real hard, you know. The beard's... There's a main beard, and there's a lot of little pieces, and they would, like, hand lay hair around the edges and stuff.
These shots of the dummy, we actually just had, like, a tube with compressed air kind of blowing out the pants. They're so frustrating to shoot because the dummy just was impossible to puppeteer. We had, like, five people with different ropes just tugging it in different directions to get it to move.
The beach is a really frustrating place to film. You know, like, when you're in the water, like, waves are smacking you at unpredictable moments, so you're like be mid-sentence trying to give direction and suddenly you're knocked over.
This is pretty exciting. This is the first time Hank starts to sing, and this is kind of like one of the first of many ideas that kind of got us excited about the movie.
Was specifically, we thought, like, what if all in one shot someone sang four different layers of a song and they started to layer in his head, you know? That from a very early stage we were like, hold on, I want to make that movie. That sounds fun to do.
Yeah. Just a crazy guy.
Kind of like a looping pedal.
Yeah.
That, like, bands will do in concerts.
Yeah, like KT Tunstall actually was one of the first times I ever saw do it on YouTube. She did it for one of her songs. And then at the Sundance Labs, we did a couple scenes at the composer's lab, and KT Tunstall was my composer for that. It was pretty fun. And she's kind of amazing. I hope we get to release that music sometime, because she wrote very different
music. I
still
haven't heard some of it.
Yeah, it's great. It's like completely different, but really catchy.
So we just left Humboldt County and went to South Los Angeles. Now we're out, like, on a boat filming Paul and Daniel on a different day.
Yeah, and we're actually dragging them alongside a boat. Actually, that the wide shots are all from a jet ski, but these are all alongside a boat with the real actors. And it was so much fun. It was like the moment in the shoot where I was like, oh man, we're actually capturing something really beautiful.
Which was only just like the start of week four. Yeah. We were almost done shooting. Yeah. But
the whole crew was having a great time too. Just
like
watching
Paul screaming
it.
Right there. I remember the moment he did that. I was like, oh my God, that's so happy and
this
beautiful.
It's pure. We're making something pure. I don't know what it is, but it feels real.
And that's just a shot you just stole from somewhere else while they were...
Yeah, in the pool, actually.
Dan has a tradition of getting in the edit, just trying to find footage that...
doesn't exist.
that we didn't intentionally shoot and just put it in the movie. So that's just the camera rolling before a take during the underwater scene.
Oh my God, this shot was so hard to get.
Yeah.
But getting the Cheetos just land in front of his face.
Ultimately, what we did was I just poured water out of a bucket.
Yeah.
Like 10 times in a row until it finally stopped where we wanted.
It was a pain in the butt.
And oh my God, that drool from his mouth is so gross.
This is probably one of my favorite shots of the movie. It's like really beautiful because of the time of day and the lighting and everything works out. But Paul's face when he like first sees the cheese puffs right there and then looks around and then he looks right past the camera. It's kind of...
Worked out good.
Yeah, it just worked out really nice.
And we spent so long debating this. It was going to like wrap around him and be a dolly move. And then it ended up just being this.
And then a whip.
And a pan.
Yeah, like, yeah, a pan, yeah.
That's it. There's a YouTube video of a man out in the Arctic finding cheese puffs, like freaking his shit, losing his shit.
Are we allowed to say shit? Yeah, probably. Yeah, this
movie's
R-rated.
Yeah, this
is
motherfuckers. And And we loved that video. It didn't used to be Cheese Puffs in our movie. It used to be a Mr. Pibcan.
Mr. Pibcan, yeah.
But then we decided like some actual food might be more fun.
Yeah, we just love the idea of like taking things that most people would like hate to find in the real world and then removing it from the real world and just making it the most exciting thing in the world.
Yeah.
That's the whole film. The whole film is just removing context from these shitty things and making them so exciting.
The alternate title is, "Oh my God, trash is so cool." Or "I heart garbage." Well, you know, that's not true. When we were doing visual effects on this, I thought that there was like glitches in the camera because there were these white dots, and it turns out they were sand crabs jumping around Daniel's face.
Yeah, these tiny little crabs. So
we removed the sand crabs because they looked distracting, but pretty funny.
This beach is probably one of the prettiest beaches I've ever seen in real life. If you ever end up going to the Humble area,
this is like just north of Eureka.
It's like awesome, and like it's a pain in the butt to get to, so our entire crew had to trudge down like this treacherous path to get down there with all the equipment. It was probably one of the hardest days of the shoot.
Yeah, and then at lunch we went and scouted for the opening scene, so we had to like hike up that, run into a car, run to a different beach, hike down that beach back, didn't eat.
Yeah, we skipped lunch that day. Our DP was
already in the car.
Like Larkin was already in such a bad mood because he hates shooting on beaches because he has no control over anything, and it was just like pretty miserable.
But we also got a good workout. Even when the shoot got miserable, it was kind of funny because it suited the movie. You know, like you could use it, and we could be like, "That's what Hank's going through," or like, "Let's put some of that frustration into the scene we're shooting this afternoon."
I like this like kind of awkward movement that kind of builds tension. It's like the camera's telling our character, go, leave the dead body, the stupid dead body that farts. That's kind of what the audience is thinking right now in the movie. Like, I should probably leave this movie, huh? I should probably go. I don't want to watch this.
Oh, but I'm not going to.
I'm not going to.
Maybe I'll stay. Yeah. I mean, maybe some people walked out right then. I don't know. Welcome to the rest of the movie for those of you that walked out first time right there.
Yeah. Now this is the audience just screaming for help in their heads, being like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why, but I'm lost. But maybe I like it. These pattern in the sand, this moment where we kind of crafted a very fun shot with footsteps just happened because while we were location scouting, we just couldn't stop making patterns in the sand, and we were like, "Oh, we'll just use that."
We were like, "Oh shit, that's gonna be so annoying when we shoot the movie. There's gonna be footprints everywhere."
Right.
And they're like, "Oh, we could do a scene where that's on purpose."
Yeah.
But this is all real Daniel. This day, Paul did a lot of carrying of real Daniel, which those are his real feet. We didn't use the dummy at all.
He got so exhausted.
Yeah.
Oh man, there were a bunch of. We couldn't shut down the beach because we didn't have the money to. So there were just a ton of people just like watching and being like, "Is that Daniel Radcliffe?" It's pretty stressful.
Yeah.
We tell people that it's a mayonnaise commercial. I guess that's kind of like a thing that people do.
Yeah. So they'd be like, "What are you shooting?" And I'd be like, "Mayonnaise commercial." And I'd be like, "Oh, I guess I don't want to watch that. That doesn't sound fun to."
Except for I think at that point the rumor had been going around that a Daniel Radcliffe movie was being shot. So everyone did not believe us.
Some folks, at least. This is admittedly some of our... This was one of the hardest scenes to cut, this first 10 minutes of them on the beach up until the cave. So this is a couple different scenes, Frankenstein together. We experimented. We did like probably 50 different cuts of what order to pace things.
And cork.
Corked his butt.
When we were shooting there's another shot where the cork comes back in the film, and we didn't have a cork because it was like really last minute decision to go shoot it, and our location scout helped us. Like I guess he used to work at a restaurant nearby, so he
called up a buddy.
Yeah.
Snuck into the back of a restaurant. We dug through the recycling at a restaurant and stole a cork.
Yeah.
And that's in the movie later, that cork.
And now we're in Los Angeles. Yep. This is actually the same cave they used to shoot the old Batman TV show. This is the Bat Cave where the Batmobile would drive out of.
There's a couple entrances, so like there's a bigger one that the Batmobile would come out of.
It's more iconic, yeah.
There's like a supercut online of like all the movies shot in this cave, and it's like hundreds. Like
yeah.
episodes of Star Trek, Westerns. This is all up in Griffith Park.
One day, our movie will be in that supercut. So this song, actually, that Paul's about to sing, wasn't originally scripted in the film until our composers, just like the day after we sent them the script, they recorded the song, sent it back, and we just loved the song so much. We decided to like write a moment where our character actually sang to the dead body, almost like a mom singing to a baby. And we wanted to make the lyrics really dumb, but hopefully the heart behind it's really impactful.
Yeah.
Gets you in the headspace of our character.
So yeah, we added this scene, and I think it's helpful because I think we never had the courage to have a scene that was just about singing. But then the more we thought about it, we're like, oh, music's such a huge part of this movie. Like, we should really take a beat and sing a song, you know?
Do you remember some of the alt lyrics that you had?
I'm trying to remember. I wrote so many.
Yeah. But something about mommy, mommy.
Mommy, mommy, I'm ruining your songy. Something like that.
Yeah, that's really great.
That was the one I really wanted. That one I still believe in that one. I'll sing it for the next verse.
Yeah, we wanted to feel like a lot of the lyrics in this movie are pretty dumb, and we wanted to feel true to like what it's like to sing songs to yourself in your own head when you're making things up or whatever. So to the dismay of our composers, we
ruined their lyrics because they wrote beautiful lyrics.
Yeah, they wrote really nice lyrics that were probably too poetic.
I'm ruining your songy. Something, something, and I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
And we settled on something pretty dumb. You're just a dead dude.
I thought I was rescued, but you're just a dead dude.
Yeah. There's gotta be a better way to get out. Daniel Radcliffe is actually incredible at not blinking. So, like, the number of times we had to take out blinks is actually pretty rare. But this was my favorite moment in the edit, where finally, from here on out, blinks are okay. It's like, okay, we don't have to worry about that. Now his eyes can move. And that's just like me, I think, with an eyedropper dripping water droplets into his mouth.
No, that's just like a little sweat coming from our boom
from
op.
Oh,
our boom
just
op
was sweating like, into Daniel's mouth.
Yeah, it's really, really hard.
Oh, right,
to
that
hold
was that take.
That. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Kirby was a sweaty lady. Sorry, Kirby. The reason the raccoon's digging around in his mouth there was unintentional. Someone had been messing around with the dummy. I think Radcliffe.
It was Daniel Radcliffe,
and
yeah.
Radcliffe had accidentally dropped a cigarette into the dummy's mouth and couldn't get it out. And so then once the raccoon came out, it started just clawing the mouth open and trying to get... I guess it was addicted to nicotine or
tobacco.
Yeah, something,
yeah.
Come on! Somebody help!
For those that don't know what ADR is, it's where, like, after you cut the movie, you come back in and record new voiceover or new dialogue. You'll have like the actor have to lip sync again if the audio was bad, or but it also gives you a chance to try to fix the story. It's like a lot of that is
ADR.
a scene that was written in the edit, you know. We were kind of trying to fix the pacing.
In the same booth that you're in now.
Oh yeah,
oh,
exactly.
Yeah. In this booth. That's our sound designer, Brent Kaiser.
Yeah. If you check the credits, he's also credited as the fartist, which is pretty important. Speaking of sound design, when they first sent over the Foley work for when they're pushing down on Daniel Radcliffe's chest, it sounded like they were crushing someone's like rib cage. It sounded awful.
Like you were just like you were driving slowly, driving a truck tire over a human body, crunching.
We had bone breaks, like flesh movement. Like, I mean, there was like 8 layers to this chest compression.
It sounded like we were killing Daniel Radcliffe.
It was almost like unwatchable, the movie, because like every few seconds, something like violently terrifying would happen. And you'd be like, it just hurts.
We toned it down in the end.
Yeah.
I think it works now.
Good call.
So this was actually a really funny scene because we didn't want to get Daniel Radcliffe wet over and over again. We shot him first, but then we kind of burnt out Paul, you know, because Paul was giving us his all, but we weren't pointing it at the camera at him. So it was kind of like a really, even though it was really fun to watch, it was kind of a hard scene to shoot because we had to essentially take a break for Paul and
for a whole day. We shot something else and came back the next day. And Paul was right. Like the difference between those performances when he was tired versus the next day doing it fresh. Like one of the biggest compliments I can give to Paul is like, he just understands how movies are made. And when he has like a suggestion or a note, he like, it's never for ego reasons. It's like pure artistic. Like, no, I can understand my craft. I need to come back tomorrow and I'll give you a great performance. Like he would just kind of, you know, direct himself sometimes and like really, surprisingly self-aware ways. It's like, oh, he really understands his craft, you know, which is invaluable. You know, both Daniel and him, you know, have obviously worked with some of the best directors in the world. So it's terrifying directing them at first, being like, so what would P.T. Anderson say? I don't know. What was Alfonso Cuarón like?
Yeah, this is a really fun scene. They got so intimate on this shoot, like sticking hands down each other's mouths and spitting in each other's mouths and
making out.
Mostly mouths, I guess. Mostly mouth things.
Pulling each other's pants down.
Yeah.
Talking about boners, poking boners.
Oh yeah, that was pretty.
Spoiler alert, if this is your first time watching the movie, turn off the commentary.
Idiot.
Go watch the movie, you idiot.
I didn't mean that. Okay, you talk however you want. You can mumble, look at your feet all day long. Okay, buddy?
Okay, buddy.
Okay, buddy.
Okay, buddy.
Okay, buddy.
When that first played for an audience and people like applauded and laughed.
Yeah, that scream is so good.
I was like, oh my God, the movie's succeeding. They care. They care.
Yeah, that take we didn't find until later, actually, because it was like a thing that got lost in the jumble. And then we're like, why are we not using this amazing scream by Paul Dano? It's
because I wanted it to all be one take.
Oh,
I thought it was
funnier.
And then, as is usually the case, I stand corrected. You know, like one of the nice things about us being a directing duo, but also just a nice thing about us trying to, like, even when it's painful, be collaborative and hear criticism from our crew,
right?
Is that like you have to like fight for your ideas and you get proven wrong a lot. It's like there's so many times where like something we felt so confident about changed. We gave up. We lost a fight. Yeah, we were wrong. There was a better thing, you know?
There's always a better way.
Or I'm just hallucinating from starvation.
Not only is his beard fake, but his hair's fake too. He's got like extensions in. We thought we would weave them in, but our hair designer, hair department head, Anissa, was like a real naysayer of like weaving hair in. She was like, no, if you just let me clip it in, it'll look better. I can take care of it. I can do it faster. So he would kind of have these little extensions woven into his hairline every morning. How you saved me. A lot of people compliment the makeup on Daniel Radcliffe, but there's more makeup on Paul. And Daniel just is pretty pale. He can just do that with his eyeball. You can actually see his veins. We just had to like add a little bit more vein. It's like there's not much makeup going on right there.
Yeah, I love that his face is so distorted in this entire movie, and so people like, you know, don't recognize him as Harry Potter anymore. But when my mom saw it, she thought I asked Daniel Radcliffe to do that on purpose because I was kind of born with like one eye smaller than the other, and so when she saw that, she's like, "Look, it's you." I'm like, "No, Mom, Daniel Radcliffe can just do that."
You were born with like one eye like glued shut.
It was it's weaker, so it was shut for the first few weeks after I was born, and then eventually. Now, as an adult, I've grown up enough eye muscle that I can keep it open. You know, that's why we made this movie. We're a bunch of freaks.
Bodies are weird.
Yeah.
But Dan Kwan's body in particular.
It's the weirdest, man.
Dan Kwan came out with a full head of hair, one eye glued shut, and a rash all over his body.
Crazy rash on my body.
And his mom was like, are you sure there's not any other Chinese babies in the hospital? Is that baby mine?
My mom's very candid like that.
Yeah, but then Dan ugly ducklinged. He turned out.
I'm so hot now.
Real handsome, yeah. He's a handsome fella. Whereas I looked pretty fine, and then now I'm just like this weird, gawky, balding man with like resting bitch face.
Yeah, but some people are into that. Yeah. Some people are into resting yeah, bitch face.
People who like
creepy old men, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is from home. But not people at playgrounds. They're not into how I look. They're like, get that man off the playground.
Oh, this is fun. This is we call it the history of the universe. This is where Paul tries to teach Daniel everything he knows about the world using just trash, just things left behind.
Which was inspired by us doing location scouts and just actually seeing tons of freaking garbage all over the most beautiful parks in America. And we'd be like, that's kind of funny. Like, let's include that. Like, our lonely man finding garbage, there's meat to that.
Yeah.
Speaking of the props, we have a special guest who's going to come in now. I'm going to go knock on the window.
One of the one of my favorite, while he's going to go get our special guest, one of my favorite images that I saw while we were location scouting was a half-empty 2-liter bottle of crushed orange soda just sitting on a beautiful redwood stump. And I was like, this is great. This is what our movie is. It's just trash in the most beautiful locations ever.
Ladies and gentlemen, our production designer, Jason Kisvarde.
Hey, how's it going, guys? What you guys up to?
Just commentating on this movie that...
We're watching our movie that we made because we love watching it so much.
Yeah, we just watch it every Wednesday.
Oh, cool. Mind if I join?
Yeah.
Not at all.
Do you want to talk about some of the trash that you worked on?
What was that poop made of that they just poked with that stick?
Oh, that was poop.
Oh.
No.
Yours?
The poop that was all brownie mix. We made lots of poop for the movie, and it was all actually really smelled.
Our DP, Larkin, is really upset that some of your most impressive poos ended up on the editing room floor.
Yeah.
There was a whole sequence where Jason created every different shape, man. Size, and kind of
we
poo.
We should do the deleted scenes montage of all the
just
poo.
All the poos? Because yeah. There's like little rabbit poo and then big moose poo.
I'm not going to lie. It's probably the most beautifully shot poop I've ever seen.
It's like really, shot like a commercial, but there's a lot of other stuff to talk about right now. Look at all these other props. We'll come back to poo.
Yeah, one of our guys in the art department, Calder, made most of all these garbage things.
He has a dog that looks like that garbage dog.
Yeah.
His dog made the dog.
Oh. Yeah. Didn't realize
art
that.
Art dog.
But the, and Calder made most of the poo as well. He's a very talented sculptor of all things.
Yeah. Yeah. And a street artist.
And a street artist.
He like puts weird cardboard sculptures around LA.
Yeah. He's oddly perfect for this film.
He is Hank.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things is the UFO in the back. Back right hanging from the ceiling.
Oh. I was going to notice that. Now you pointed to that.
There you go.
Oh.
I like the Pringles can airplane.
Yeah. Well, what was funny is the only thing we were really cleared to use product placement were Hostess products.
Right. So we tried real hard to get other sponsors, but everyone said no, except Hostess.
Yeah. Oh, you want to use our product completely out of context in this strange movie? Absolutely not.
You want to use it as trash in some beautiful national redwood forest?
Great. Yeah. Sports Illustrated said no. Victoria's Secret said no.
But Hostess was like, that sounds great.
Because apparently Hostess approved Twinkies in the movie Zombieland. And it went so well because, like, the running joke was, like, that's the only food that survived the apocalypse, so they all eat tons of Twinkies.
So I guess it must have affected their sales somehow.
Yeah, and so now they, like, they will say yes.
To anything. Doesn't matter
what
it is.
They're just like, yeah, put us in movies. We don't care.
They're kind of like Donald Trump, you know? Any
publicity.
Yeah, exactly. It's right. Good.
Twinkies. The Donald Trump. I mean, I don't know if they think. I think comparing them to Donald Trump maybe is the line. Now they're going to stop letting people.
Who knows? Maybe they're into it.
Yeah.
If they have
50% of America may or may not like Trump and Twinkies.
Yeah.
We really want this whole commentary to be about Donald Trump. What do you think about Trump, Jason?
Oh, no. I like Twinkies too.
Oh, cool. Good segue. I saw this magazine, Sports Limited, the cover, I saw in, I think an episode of Key and Peele. Yeah. It's like a,
it's just a stock thing.
It's a stock photo.
Yeah, the photos on the inside we licensed and had to do that all separately. But yeah, the cover, you can just go to one of the prop houses and pick up a copy.
Like,
right,
the vodka.
Like this girl right here, she has no idea that her stock photo would end up being in this movie where Daniel Radcliffe gets a magical boner from her.
Who would have thought that we would slowly pan down to her vagina on a big screen in theaters across
25
America.
25 feet tall.
I hope she's okay.
I hope she watches this one day and feels really proud of her work.
Right. I would be.
Yeah. Well, having baby Daniel Radcliffe just talk about you.
Mm-hmm. This heartbeat was a crazy sound effect. To figure out, what did we end up using, Brent?
We used a normal like heartbeat, but we mixed it with like bellows, like leather bellows for like stoking fires and stuff to get crackly sounds. Andrew Twite and Russell Gorski worked on this one really hard to make it sound kind of dried out.
Yeah, dead dry heart.
Like you and Jesse, you probably stayed at home together all the time watching movies. You'd fall asleep on the couch unless you were throwing one of your awesome.
And here comes one of our best practical effects in the whole movie.
Yeah, good.
This wiener.
Jason Hamer, our extremely talented practical effects and
as well as makeup department head, as well as the dummy fabricator
and animatronic wieners.
Yeah, yep. I don't know the name of the guy, but he had a friend who he hired to make this animatronic wiener, and it's all done with like bicycle wires. So it's like old school animatronics where like you move a joystick, it makes a wire kind of pull the wiener in a certain direction. So in real time, wherever the joystick goes, the wiener goes. I had no idea it would be so simple. Like when you look at it, it's like, it's so common sense. It's like, there's just very few pieces and it works so well.
It's kind of on an X and Y axis. And what's funny is the lever that you pull, it's like one of those trap door levers. It's like 3 feet long, and there's some guy, you know, like rowing a Viking ship with this giant lever.
Yeah, it's like he's around. Jacking off a giant metal wiener in order to make this other wiener wiggle. I mean, that's a pretty graphic way to describe it. Sorry, Mom.
Yeah, it's an impressive rig.
Yeah, and so, yeah, he even controlled it because he, understood it. So he was just off camera during this whole scene, and kind of like during the scene, I would kind of tap him on the shoulder sometimes to give him notes, but he kind of acted opposite.
He embodied
Paul and Daniel.
The member.
We spent so long in the edit on things that like made us feel like crazy people. Like we edited that boner scene so many different times, just constantly paranoid that we like crossed the line into like unfunniness, or crossed the line into like just like kind of abrasive funniness, like
too jokey.
Yeah, and it was like a pretty relentless balancing act where those kinds of scenes in the movie we spent so long on, because we were really, it was, I mean, that's kind of the reason we made the movie, was for those scenes that combine tones. But then those scenes ended up being some of the hardest ones to kind of like confidently edit. This was an invented scene. This was supposed to be at the very beginning of the film.
Where's Bigfoot?
Where's Bigfoot?
Yeah, where's Bigfoot?
Just so you guys know, Jason Cazvarde snuck Bigfoot into our film.
So there's a Sasquatch somewhere in the middle of this movie. Go looking for it. If you find it, we'll give you a Daniel Radcliffe towel. I don't know.
Or like 20 bucks or something. Yeah, just get in touch with us.
We'll retweet your tweet
you
for you.
but what happened was Jason Kwan knew, but I didn't know at all. Daniel Radcliffe's assistant / bodyguard is this guy Spencer, this really jacked ex-Marine from London who's like the sweetest, was on set all the time. So he dressed up as Bigfoot. This was one of our last days that we shot.
I think it's Sam.
A lot of us wandering.
Wasn't it Sam? Spencer is his manager.
Oh, yeah, it was Sam.
Oh, Sam, I said Spencer.
Yeah.
I like the idea of Spencer being the jacked one, though, if you know Spencer.
Hi, Spencer. You're not a bodyguard ex-Marine. Spencer's
His manager. And
used to be a choreographer, I think.
Yeah, he's a dance choreographer.
Yeah.
Jacked in his own right.
Yes.
Yeah. They're both just beautiful boys with beautiful accents.
But yeah, I think it was the very end of a stressful day, way out in the forest, and we had Sam slip on this this Bigfoot costume that our amazing costume department sourced, and didn't really tell anybody, and we had a walkie-talkie, and we sent him way out and deep in the forest, and just sort of had him walking back and forth between the trees, and one by one, people were looking up from the monitor, our focus puller, Matt, just yelped really loud when he saw it as he's pulling focus. And I think Larkin got mad because it sort of was the one take we had of that shot. He's like, you ruined my shot.
Larkin's our DP.
The best part was the, like, I think maybe 2 days later or maybe the next day, we were shooting just like with a small crew, and this big pickup truck drives by, stops, and there's a whole family sitting in the pickup truck, and their entire bed of the truck is just filled with junk, like as if they just like packed up their stuff. And
they're like, did you guys hear? There was a Bigfoot sighting over in Bull's Creek like a couple days ago. Yeah. And we were like, or Sasquatch, I think is
yeah,
what I said.
Sasquatch, yeah.
And we're like, holy cow, did our costume start Sasquatch rumors yeah. across America? Like, did they cross the country? We never found out where they were from.
They were probably locals. They probably moved yeah. there. Moved.
It's a big thing up in the Pacific Northwest. Like, Sasquatch is not a joke.
Yeah,
like,
a lot of people actually really believe in it and actually have seen them. Like they claim they've seen them. Like, we actually have a friend who's seen them. Dugan, right?
Dugan claims he's seen him?
Yeah.
I know he believes in him or has friends.
Because Dugan used to live up by Big Sur. He's a director buddy of ours. But, yeah, the Sasquatch is very real to them. Even if she was right.
So this is shot in the same general area of Humboldt County.
This was a really hard scene to shoot because it was just dialogue, and it was just like the craziest dialogue too. It kind of made
the dialogue we were most ashamed of. But yeah. A recurring theme of the film is like, you know, like the negative effects that shame have on people. And so like the movie itself is this giant weird like experiment in therapy where we're like, right. Okay, we're gonna write this down, yeah. We're gonna make our favorite actors say it. Oh my god, he's gonna talk about masturbation.
He's gonna talk about his mom and masturbation. We're gonna feel awful while we film it. Okay, great. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. This was the last week of shooting, and I was like, we all took turns getting ill. So I was like so ill.
Yeah, actually,
really
I think this was the day that we all got B12 vitamin B12 shots in our arms.
It might have been. It was the day with the raccoon, I know.
Yeah.
Which is like a, I don't know, like a pill supplement. Like they just give you B12 shots to try to like help your immune system and help your energy levels.
So you don't die.
But it felt like we were just getting drugs on set. Like we just went over, sat in a chair, and a lady with a syringe gave us drugs. I felt like so 90s music video director.
Yeah,
right then.
Very Pink Floyd moment.
Yeah, so dope. And then we were just like, who else wants some? And then we all just like partied that night in the woods.
Yeah.
Actually, the other thing that was crazy about this location was we shot here 2 different days, and there was a 2-day break in between, and it caught on fire.
In the middle of the break.
Yeah. And we like one day while we were shooting, we heard like, hey, we might not get the location back tomorrow because it's on fire right now. And luckily they blamed some hikers, not us, or else they definitely wouldn't have let us back, you know. Yeah. If they'd been like, those film guys lit our national park on fire. I think it was a state park. Whoa. Oh, some of your best poo.
There we go.
That actually smelled great, that stuff.
Yeah,
it was
brownie.
Like fresh brownie mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, I felt bad wasting it.
And this was a national forest?
I think it's a state park.
State park. Okay.
Redwood State Park.
Okay.
National forests are like really hard to shoot in. State parks are a little easier.
This is by Avenue of the Giants, right?
Yes.
It is, yeah. So those rustling leaves, that's like our whole camera department and lighting department like hiding in the bushes, and each one had a different cue.
Yeah.
So like our key grip was up there like hiding behind a bush, and we'd be like, okay, now you jiggle. Shaking leaves.
You can see his contact lenses right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I always notice that. It's real subtle, but I don't think a man stranded in the middle of nowhere would have contact solution, so.
Turn off the movie. Guys, we're sorry we blew it.
It's not worth the movie.
We'll do a director's cut.
Please suspend your disbelief.
My favorite thing about this shot where he throws Daniel is we didn't have a stunt pad, so our whole crew did a trust fall. So right here, they just caught Daniel. Like, everyone was just standing there, and it was like, such team bonding. Let's listen to this.
Oh yeah, nice sound design, Brent.
That
that was some of the John Siebert on the Foley team. He really brought that one alive.
Yeah,
and that was transferring us from Humboldt to San Francisco.
Yeah, yeah, now we're in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So like each of those shots is like practical shots, kind of composited with some fake elements to try to make the.
It's impossible to find a ravine.
Isn't this one of our first days of shooting?
This is the first scene we shot.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out. We had to go back and reshoot some of it because that's what happens on your first day of shooting.
Everyone said you're going to go back and reshoot everything that you do on your first day. And we only reshot some of it.
Yeah, so
and
we're
then
better
wished
than
we had reshot other bits. this was like that boner shot was before we had our animatronic rig. So that's why it just doesn't look as good.
No, it's mine.
Manny. I think the ringtone should be talked about because that has a big recurring theme.
Oh yeah, that's right. The whenever he turns on the cell phone, it goes ba da ba da ba, and then whenever you turn it off, it goes da 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 da.
Which sounds vaguely familiar. It almost sounds like that song Manny sings, right. "Sitting on this rock."
Yeah. So later, a lovely what rock. Happened was our composers wrote a song that we really loved and put it in the moment where Manny rescues Hank from the bear later on in the movie, and we went back and decided to turn the ring, the cell phone's sounds into those melodies, so that like it's almost as if by the time. Manny is open and singing to himself, he subconsciously has adapted the cell phone song into his own melody. Just thought that was a fun touch.
Oh, there's... this is our set decorator, Kelsey.
Yeah, that's
right
not
there
Mary.
With the black fingernails. and at that point, we had lost the dress, the yellow dress that Sarah
wears.
Well,
it's Mary Elizabeth's actual dress that she wore, and she actually brought it to a thrift store, and... so she didn't have
donated
anymore.
It.
Yeah.
And so Kelsey had to buy a yellow dress, and then she hand stamped the pattern, which
it's also reflected on that couch too.
Also on that couch. But she hand stamped a pattern into the dress, and then put it on and went and had a cameo to help us shoot that bus scene.
Yeah, she was so bummed afterwards. She didn't realize that fingernail polish was going to make it in the movie, so she felt bad about that.
No, it looks cool. You know, it gives her a little bit more of an edge, the character.
Mary, yeah. Sarah's so edgy.
Yeah. Actually, Mary loves, me and her bonded over emo music from the early 2000s. So, you know, she was totally into like Taking Back Sunday and Brand New. She probably painted her nails black, so it's fitting. It works.
Good job.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how gross the inside of popcorn bags are. And so we like ripped that open. I was like, oh my God, it's just like clumpy
chemicals. Yeah.
Clumpy chemical butter.
Yeah.
So we had to like clean it out.
That's what all the food in this movie is, though. It's just like so far removed from the actual thing. Like popcorn doesn't look like corn at all. The butter doesn't look like butter at all. What is butter? You know, it's just like.
What are cheese puffs made of?
Yeah, exactly. It's so far removed from the real thing.
Sounds really.
It's pretty convoluted. Modern society is pretty convoluted, guys.
Man, we're just, we gotta get back to basics, you know?
Yeah, just go back to farting in the woods.
You just gotta go back in the woods and eat sticks and fart.
Yeah.
That's the moral of the story.
Hurry before you starve and die.
So this, one of the things we underappreciated when scripting was just like, when you write a scene in a ravine, what's that going to be like to shoot a movie in a ravine?
Yeah.
So we found, it took forever to find this ravine. And then once we did, getting in and out was real hard.
And Jason, your art team had to like carry like huge, like the couch and all this stuff down the ravine.
Yeah. Everything had to be hand carried down here, lowered with ropes.
We were like, hey, all you have to do in the ravine is the bus scene and the movie theater scene and the ravine scene and...
Yeah. Well, and then getting it all back out when we're done. So that was.
But we built a staircase, or the location guys, at least in this one, built an actual wooden staircase to like.
Yeah, that saved the day, to be honest.
Yeah.
That was really nice. But yeah, no, there's no flat ground anywhere. So when you're putting your tools down, or once we were down there shooting, everybody's just hanging out on the rocks, laying against the side
of
the hill.
That's some equipment over there on the right. But,
it looks like trash.
But I was like, it looks like trash. Like, leave it. Like, we spent so long dressing each scene with garbage. Sometimes when our crew, our equipment showed up, I was like, oh, works.
And that all being said, these are some of the most beautiful places you'll ever go to. And you know, it was just fun hanging out there for days and days in these gorgeous locations.
Yeah. This location was special because it was private property. Like, most places would nevertheless build these sets in the middle of their beautiful forest. And so we got really lucky and found this place that was, like, beautiful, but also, like, production-friendly.
Yeah, and the family that owned it ended up just kind of, like, hanging out, and they were just real excited about the movie. They were kind of, like, part of the crew.
Daniel Radcliffe loved shooting that shot. He just wanted it to be as gross as possible. He's like, put more hair in my mouth.
So gross.
Our script supervisor, Andrea, was, like, crying because she was trying not to laugh while they were shooting it. It was pretty great to turn over and see her eyes watering.
And that was a real banana slug that we just saw. They were everywhere.
Didn't you guys name it something?
I don't remember.
You name it Ronnie?
Maybe.
Oh, no, you named the salamander Ronnie, I remember.
We also had a guy named Ronnie.
Exactly. Yeah, I think they named the salamander after Ronnie.
I think they named it after Ronnie.
that's probably what it was.
Yeah. So this...
Here we are, the bus.
The bus.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how it was built and then rebuilt?
Yeah, so we started prepping the job in Los Angeles, and... The direction we were heading in then was things are made out of garbage. So we built most of this bus using garbage and ski poles and crutches and wheelchair parts. And once we got up there, we realized that it was way too much. So we shifted gears and went, you know, 80% garbage and 20%, sorry, flip that. 80% sticks and found things, 20% garbage. So most of this was all just stuff that we found
in space. Yeah.
Yeah. Up the ravine, there was a big sort of wash or a dam where, okay, you know, sticks and things had, every time it would flood, they'd all get stuck up at this one spot. And so we spent half a day walking up there, dragging sticks and twigs down. And we built it like a normal set with just screws and baling wire, and then we went and hid that all with mud and moss and whatnot. So it was actually pretty sturdy. And we stood there and shook it and lived in it for a few days. But it was
Shot this the first week of shooting, right? I think this was one of the first times while we were like filming that we felt like we were making a movie. this scene actually, once our on-set editor Kyle started to cut it together, and we watched like a really rough version of it together during lunch, and it just felt really nice, like there was something that these characters were bonding over, and it felt exciting.
Yeah, kind of against our will, our producer Jonathan Wong showed a cut of this scene.
This is one of my favorite shots in the movie.
This one right here?
Yeah.
Yeah. This one's our producer, Miranda Bailey's favorite shot. She was at the monitor and she was like, this is so exciting. Can I have that? Can I have that paper
that spinny
wheel?
Thing?
Yeah, yeah, she wanted it so bad.
Yeah. But you're saying Jonathan showed it to our
he
crew?
He showed this whole scene to the crew at the end of the first week. And
at a party, everyone was like drunk and we were like in a hotel room and he showed it to everyone.
Apparently
it
went over like gangbusters and it kind of like... It just boosted morale, like, for the whole 4 weeks. Suddenly, like, everyone was really personally invested in this film because we had this music. Like, Andy and Robert, our composers, had already done the Jurassic Park song and done the Cotton Eye Joe song. So the whole thing kind of, it played out pretty similarly to this, even just Kyle's quick assembly.
I know that scene with the, where he comes walking in is a lot of our department's favorite scene with the pollen floating
in
the
air. Oh, yeah, you guys found some crazy pollen. Flare.
That's like me and Allie Rubenfeld just like blowing pollen and then inhaling tons of pollen.
Yeah, everyone was like sneezing and coughing.
Oh, right there, screw hole. That's the one.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So we you know, drilled holes and put the whole set together with screws and we covered, that was the one that I keep seeing every time I watch this.
Where did you get the pollen
there
from?
There it is. Screw hole.
You keep seeing
it. Kills
it just
me.
Looks like a bug. Took a shit on that stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I know.
You know. I know, you know too much. Right there.
You're not gonna do giant bag of pollen, and I'm surprised everyone didn't have allergies. And,
right.
I mean, our boom op was
coughing. Ill. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Because she would be like crying and red in the face from not coughing during takes, and then as soon as we said cut, Kirby was big.
Poor Kirby.
Yeah.
It was a hard job.
Yeah. this scene was hard for the sound department in a lot of ways, because also there's a babbling brook, like a little waterfall behind Paul.
This shot, this scene of Paul, we didn't intend to go through the whole thing in one of these shots. Like, we intended to cut, and he just kept going, and it was so good that we just kept filming, because it just felt, it was the first time we got to see Paul really just
go to a dark place.
Yeah, and exist in the character in such a intimate way. So we just kept filming. It was really great. Such a fun surprise.
It became like a recurring trend on the shoot where, like, we wouldn't think we were going to go through a scene, and then Paul and Daniel would just kind of like catch a wave, and we
just
luckily
watch
like
it go. Yeah.
Larkin can keep, you know, he can think quick on his feet and just follow what's happening.
This is our Weekend at Bernie's moment, even though neither of us have seen.
Yeah,
Dan
and I still haven't seen it, but I've seen this in the trailer. that they carry, like, he has sunglasses in that movie or something. Yeah.
This is my favorite pickup line in the world. Yeah.
So you're a freak.
Have you tried it yet?
What? How do you think I met my wife?
Just kind of keeps like, wig keeps getting better. Slowly things just kind of keep getting better.
Yeah, we had a couple different wigs that were like a little nicer or a little crappier. But I was going to say the other sound thing was that our Iris, I forget what her title is, but she had to crawl
sound tech, yeah,
all through the river and put down this
sound
stuff,
blankets, or
these like weird mossy blanket fabric.
Called like buffalo hides or something. I forget.
Yeah.
Otter hides.
So she had to like crawl. Like,
I love this shot too.
Everywhere.
This is some of the best production audio I've gotten.
This movie?
Yeah. Steve and them did an amazing job.
Yeah. You're just saying that.
They were rock stars.
There's a little moment, a little push in with the flare. That was completely, I don't know, not completely unintentional, but it was a fun surprise. And we kept, once we found it, we kept finding a way to time out those flares.
Sarah.
That's her name.
Radcliffe looks so gross.
Yeah. It's really creepy. You don't think he'd pick up a chick on a bus if he looked and acted like this?
Yeah, it was really important to us that he looked awful throughout the film, even though you're supposed to fall in love with them, just because the whole movie's like an empathy game. It's like, how much can we care about something that we should not care about?
Yeah, so it's kind of fun to try to make him as sweet and endearing as possible so that then we can keep him funny looking.
And here comes the montage.
We probably devoted like a week of our shoot to this 3 minutes. That's not stock footage. We shot that popcorn, yo.
Next to a swimming pool. And when we wrote this song, we were really excited because it was like really fun, but we didn't think it would be like the jam of the movie. Like people really...
All over Spotify?
All over Spotify, yeah.
Jurassic Park.
The distributor. Yeah. So we got Jurassic Park there. Let's name all the movies. Yeah. There's a couple that fell by the wayside that we didn't include, but Titanic. Superman... Say anything, E.T. Although Superman,
when Radcliffe saw Superman, he thought it was a Harry Potter reference. Like, oh, sorry,
he was like, ha ha ha, that's so funny. You guys did Harry Potter, and we were like, not everything's about you. You crazy? No, it's a funny, honest mistake.
This was the first day of shooting, and that was the first. That was the first shot, actually,
with Daniel, I think. Or no, we shot the
fork going right, into
right.
the stuff going into his mouth
right.
first.
The first shot of Daniel Radcliffe was him falling on the ground with no pads. It was pretty scary. But he was all about it. He's like, did it look good?
Yeah.
Let's do it again.
We're like, it looked good. Now put pads on because you have to do this for 5 weeks.
Stupid raccoons.
The raccoon trainers were like, you're not going to use this shot. Like, anytime people kill animals in their movies, they delete that scene.
Yeah.
Not in our movie.
Fish come floating up to the water. Yeah.
A lot of people have been saying things like that about our movie. Every time you do this kind of thing in a movie, that gets cut. Well, we kept it all.
We kept it.
Everything.
Dang it. But each of these scenes was its own, like, couple hours of shooting.
Dan Radcliffe was, like, gagging eating that stuff because he's kind of, you know, he has a very specific diet and doesn't eat everything. So
he doesn't like vegetables or anything green.
Yeah, so eating some of that stuff was, like, kind of insane for him.
We thought he'd be grossed out by the meat, but he was grossed out by the fake meat. And he was like, can I just eat the rabbit leg, please?
Yeah.
This is funny. That golf cart really works. And originally this scene was, like, a high octane. They're barreling down a hillside in a homemade golf cart. But we found in the edit, like, it really confused people. They were like, why do they have a functioning car? So we used the worst shots and made it awkward, and it worked better.
That was actually Daniel Radcliffe doing the gurgle sound. Remember in the ADR, he had to swallow all this water.
We got him water so he could, and he sang while gargling water. Yeah, we were like, pretty great. Sing along to the music. He's like, wah, 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 wah. Dan and I had a huge fight about whether or not right there he should say we're having a party or we're having a Halloween party.
Lost in the woods.
We also added the line, I'm lost in the woods, and Paul Dano kept making fun of us because we were so on the nose. Like, this is what our movie's about. That's why they're dressed up silly.
Yeah.
This is a Halloween party, and you can barely see them, but the other dummies around the party are... There's a Darth Vader dummy and a skeleton dummy and a ghost.
Yeah, this montage is kind of like simultaneously us making fun of what rom-coms are and also celebrating what they are. It's like, these are the things that Hank really wished he had in his life because of what he sees in movies and TV and stuff like that. And so we just wanted to go full on and try to recreate those things. And like, one of those things that you always see in movies is like a Halloween party where two people are dressed up as funny things.
And the girl's a cute cat.
And they fall in love. Yeah, exactly. So it just felt like a fun thing to add to the mix.
But then this is the one day that paparazzi snuck onto our set and took photos of Daniel in this outfit.
So
then
confusing.
All these photos went online, was like, Dan Radcliffe's new movie, and it's just Daniel dressed as a superhero, like covered in cardboard
and trash.
Like,
yeah,
and they stole the photos during daytime, so they just looked real ugly. And that was the opposite of a morale boost for the crew.
It was really uncomfortable, and we'd never experienced anything like that because we'd never worked with anyone, you know, who would get paparazzi.
This was the second time we built the same set. The first time was up in Humboldt, San Francisco.
Yeah.
And it was in a cow pasture. And they told us, they're like, look, you got to put up an electric fence or the cows are going to get your set. I'm like, yeah, no problem. So we built this whole thing, dummies hanging from the tree, this whole set. And we set up the electric fence and left for the day. Came back the next morning, the set was gone. Yeah. Just gone and cow shit everywhere. And I think we'd set up the fence incorrectly and we're like, what happened? And apparently a whole mess of cows came through and dragged our set to the other side of the hill. But then we wound up rebuilding it completely down back in Los Angeles, and that's where we ended up shooting it.
Good hustle, guys. Sorry. We should have filmed it. That would have been cool.
Yeah, hidden cameras.
I think it actually looked really cool down where we wound up setting it up.
Yeah, I think it worked out in the end.
Why
would you ever that little montage of things that he compares to masturbation was pretty long, and we cut it down to like two or three things because we thought it was like too gratuitous, but then
we realized it was like so much less adorable if it was just three things.
Yeah.
The joke is that
it just keeps going, and
that Manny thinks everything is like masturbation. Like,
self-love, man. That's what the movie's about. Gotta love yourself.
I'm really drunk.
I am, me too.
Gotta love yourself enough to let you make out with a dead body, you know? I love that this movie came out at the same time as Neon Demon and BFG, because then people could go get like a double feature of necrophilia and then a double feature of farts. It's kind of... It kind of makes our movie a little bit less weird.
Spoiler alert.
What? Oh, sorry.
She has sex with a dead giant?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
pretty crazy. There was necrophilia in the BFG.
Yeah. Yeah. I still haven't seen the BFG, actually.
Maybe by the time this DVD comes out.
Yeah. Maybe they'll do like a bundle, you know? BFG.
Bundle us with them?
Yeah, so Sorry Man BFG bundle, DVD bundle.
There we go.
In the 99 cents bin.
You heard it here first.
Or at like a gas station. You just see our movie with the BFG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dream is to see our movie
on an airplane, right?
On an airplane. Or a gas station would be funny too.
Yeah, it'd be pretty good.
Like one of those bundles. That's when you know you've made it, when your movie's getting bundled for $2.
Or at like a thrift store, but you know, like at the thrift store, they'd like have like five or six of them because everyone returned them, you know.
Shooting this scene made me pretty sure I was in no rush to make a Marvel movie. Because shooting a scene where you can't be on a real location, like this whole pipe and river is a combination of like five different shoot days. And like that.
Oh, by
kind
the
of,
way, this is the saddest boner shot in the history of cinema.
Yeah, we're pretty proud of the sad boner, and I'm actually puppeteering the wiener there. I'm just off camera.
But go back to talking.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, it's such a stressful thing shooting, you know, this section on one day.
And this was only like a 10-foot long piece of pipe.
Yeah, this is, and it's made of PVC.
Put in all the metal sounds to make it feel metallic.
Yeah, yeah. This is a group effort to make this thing feel real.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sound design almost more than the visual effects pulls the whole thing together. I don't know what to call it. Because you kind of get immersed in it. But so now we're on a different shoot day, and they're up on a pipe. But then that water is shot on a different shoot day back at a real river, whereas they're shot on a blue screen, and it's a, you know, it's a really scary thing to not be able to shoot linearly at all, you know?
Yeah, we have no imaginations, and so
as you can tell from our work.
Yeah, so like when we're shooting and we're not actually there, it's really hard for us to know if it's going to work.
But then again, it is pretty satisfying when it finally sticks together and you're like, oh my God. And like, or when someone comes up after the movie is like, where'd you film that pipe?
Right.
Like, best question ever. It's totally fake, you idiot.
One of my favorite sounds in the whole movie is coming up when they fall.
Which one specifically?
The
oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's pretty
great. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, here comes one of Brent Kaiser's favorite sounds. Probably like 10 seconds.
Dan Radcliffe loved hanging upside down. He's like kind of masochistic about it.
Damn.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
And now we're in a pool.
Yeah, now we're in a pool in like Acton, California. And with this one again, Paul and Daniel did a lot of their own stunts.
Yeah. Paul had never done any underwater work, actually, which made us kind of nervous. But
he was a one-take wonder. Like, he would just do a take and just, like, nail it.
Yeah. Well, and Daniel couldn't swim.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Daniel Radcliffe doesn't know how to swim.
He doesn't like to tread water, but he's scuba certified.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Because he had to do it for the fourth Harry Potter movie. He had to go. There's, like, a whole sequence where he eats some gillyweed and grows some gills, you know?
But it's fun how, like, just the smallest little art elements helped sell this scene. So there's like just a couple floating bits of seaweed, you know, and then mostly just black plastic in a pool.
We didn't ask them to do this, but when they were kissing and doing this, Dan Radcliffe would actually blow into Paul's lungs.
Really?
Yeah, they said it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, because I mean, I guess they wanted to make it feel real, but
that's so funny.
Yeah, it sounds awful.
Yeah, that's the most unromantic kiss ever.
Yeah.
It's a man blowing air into another man's mouth.
This is kind of like one of the first powers that started to make sense for us while we're writing, because we're like, oh, the power not only serves like a practical purpose, but also like a
this is that cork.
That's the magic cork.
Stolen
cork.
But it also serves like an emotional character moment at the same time, and then we realized that's what we would kind of use as a litmus test for every power.
Like, we're like, how can we make it emotional and funny and action packed?
Oh, that's a fake butt.
With real air blasting out the butt crack.
It's pretty crazy.
Another Jason Hammer creation.
And then that's real stuntmen getting yanked out of a pool at like 20 miles per hour.
I love this shot. It's like, it was a fun surprise. We just had them jump over the camera into a pool, and we had a bunch of water spraying over all over the place, and that's what it looked like in the end. It looked awesome.
And this shot, when we first shot it, we were like, we can't use that. That's too much butt crack.
And we asked
Daniel. So we showed Daniel, we're like, is this okay? And he's like, guys, like, whatever serves the story. Like, I signed up for this movie. Like, we got to do it. And we're like, thank you. You're a trooper.
Man, he's an artist. He understands that watching his happy face right next to his butt kind of encapsulates the whole movie in a single shot.
Originally, that whole scene was scored with like an explosions in the sky, epic,
Sigur Rós,
like Sigur Rós song. Yeah. And then in the edit, we realized like we were trying to hit climaxes too often. You know, like every 10 minutes there was a new climax. So we went back through our emails and found a recording that Andy had sent me of like basically that ballad.
Yeah.
And we like kind of clenched our teeth and plugged it in. We were like, oh no, this works really good.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of
we've wasted their time, but they had made us like this epic, amazing song.
It was beautiful. But we realized this was actually more like that scene in the romantic comedy where the two unlikely people actually start to fall for each other, and then this is kind of
hold
like
hold hands and go on a walk or something.
Yeah, and then you see a montage of them actually enjoying themselves. You know, like we actually watched 10 Things or How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. There's a sequence where Matthew McConaughey visits what's her name again? Jennifer.
Shoot. Lawrence. Jennifer no, I don't Lawrence. Remember.
Yeah. Oh my God. Kate Hudson. Kate okay. Hudson, visits her family and they just enjoy each other's company. And this is kind of like the post-coitus scene in a romantic comedy where after they've banged, they talk about life and feelings. And then they realize, you know.
They still got problems.
There's still problems. They're not out of the woods yet.
Oh no. They're going to get torn apart and then have to run to each other at the airport later.
Exactly.
That's kind the beach of, is the airport.
Yeah, exactly.
We legitimately like struggled like with like should this be a survival film or you know should this be just a full on art film, and we landed on this is a rom com.
Yeah.
Like when in doubt, we would kind of just try to like find a familiar rom com beat because the last thing we wanted was for this movie to be like weird in an off putting way. We wanted it to be like all really familiar and accessible. In spite of being the weirdest premise of all time, you know?
Right.
Hold it in. That's what you're supposed to do.
That was kind of an aha moment for us. Did not expect rom-coms to help us in the writing.
I love rom-coms, though. I haven't seen a good one in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Though I did see... Sorry.
Oh, the BFG.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good rom-com.
Yeah, yeah, that necrophilia rom-com. Neon Demon's a pretty good rom-com.
Yeah.
Which one did you see?
Oh, no, I saw Spectacular Now on an airplane. I was surprised that I liked it. Because I remember you said you didn't like it, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm a big not fan. I felt like they were just, like, doing awkward, unconvincing improv the whole time.
Oh, I really loved it, actually. It's pretty funny.
this was all back in Los Angeles.
Because, oh, that's right.
We had to do all of our pyro stuff down here. It's a Gillette Ranch.
Yeah, and it's a night shoot. So, like, the lighting team had, like, a huge job, you know, wide shots shot at night that don't look like one light are really hard.
And then just trying to make the Southern California desert look like the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, that was the job.
Which is why it's at night also.
That pee was the classic water bottle gag where you just poke a hole in the top of a water bottle and squeeze it.
That's what I do every time I go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's never real.
I think they're called sheenuses.
What?
A sheenus?
Wait, do you?
Yeah. Uh-oh. No, yeah, it's a little cup you pee in, like standing up for women. Sheenus.
Oh, those are great. Oh, yeah. I've seen videos for those, but ours was, you know. Paul tried to pee, but.
Marketing plug for sheenuses.
Sheenus.com.
So all the graphics on the phone are assistant art director Natalie handled all of that and had a friend of hers make that animated graphic.
She actually sent it to you for your birthday, right?
Yeah. I got that for my birthday this year. Yeah, it's like, pretty happy funny. Birthday, and his little dog.
And every year after.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Automated forever. I love, yeah, this is like a really funny song because it's just, we asked Daniel Radcliffe to just like improv random shit and just sing whatever he wanted. And so
and he was like, okay, just, you know, maybe you'll just use a little bit of it. And we ended up using like almost all of it.
I'm sitting on a rock.
I would like to pee.
We had to get out of it because it kept on going, and you guys were like, "No, no, get out of it!
It's
get
a little
out
too
of
distracting."
Yeah, we ended up turning the volume down on it.
But then the composers kind of composed a song around that, which is kind of a fun process.
And it's really great because it calls and responses, so it bounces from left to right.
Yeah.
In the mix, which is amazing.
Yeah, do you want to talk a bit about like how crazily mixed this is, Brent?
Oh yeah, we did this in Atmos, so that means you know everywhere.
It's like super surround sound.
Yeah, it was because it was really interesting how like especially Daniel Kwan being like, I want sound there, and would point in some random spot of the room, and it actually work.
Yeah.
But the music, we had it split up, so if you can see it in Atmos, and there should be an Atmos home version on this DVD, Blu-ray.
Really?
Blu-ray, as well.
Yeah. For all you rich people with Atmos at home.
Yeah.
Wait, can you make my voice go, like, around their heads over and over again in the commentary?
We'd have to go mix this commentary in Atmos again.
I think it's worth it.
Well, oh, and another little side fun note here with the sound and everything is how rhythmic you guys wanted everything to be. With all the effects.
Totally.
Yeah, we're music video directors. We can't get away from the rhythm.
Yeah, and I'd like to think that our bear is better than the Revenant. Just putting it out there.
Oh yeah, we've got a couple of tweets from people out in the world saying that they liked our bear better than the Revenant bear.
I was pretty into the Revenant bear.
What was our bear's name?
Tag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tag loved. He did all his tricks for marshmallows. They would, like, throw marshmallows in his mouth.
Yeah, sweet tooth.
And then if he really wasn't paying attention or they wanted him to get back in his trailer, they'd give him an ice cream sandwich, which was his absolute favorite. But the way that bear trainers work with bears is they just scream at them.
It's pretty terrifying.
So they're just going, like, tag, tag, no, big, big, big. And big, big is when the bear roars. But he never roared on set. He would just open his mouth and kind of like show off
miniature
his teeth.
Tree.
Oh, yeah. These trees are actually just miniatures built by Jason. Pretty exciting.
Snuck off to his backyard.
Did you guys just beating on them in a dark room?
That's black
Jenna,
room.
Jenna Radcliffe on a rolly chair in a dark room.
Yeah, so I would be like throwing leaves at his face while someone else carried around a fiberglass tree trunk.
And swatting him with branches and limbs.
Yeah.
And again, like a trick like that really comes together when like Brent and his team would like sound design it to high heaven.
We had a Wilhelm scream in there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And that's probably too much.
Yeah. We were told that that's Ben Burtt's sound by Bo Borders, and he's like, I don't play it.
Sound mixer. Yeah. He's like, no, turn it off.
What is that flashing in my head?
This was them actually up on the tree, and they were up there for a while. Oh man, these tears are kind of amazing. It was done practically. Jason built like these weird tear rigs that would just kind of go right under the eye and spray him in the eyes, and then they'd come dripping out again.
So like the water would literally shoot into Dan Radcliffe's like eyeball and then drip back out.
Yeah.
Minimal cleanup in post, right?
Yeah, you could see a little tube under his eye that almost looked like his vein was bulging.
Yeah.
And that's all we cleaned up in post was the tube.
It worked out nicely.
But yeah, we shot this whole scene actually in a tree because we knew we needed to shoot some shots up there, and then we're like, right, why not just be up there?
We call this the nightmare suite sequence, or baby's first existential crisis. It's supposed to be kind of like a fun look at a baby kind of becoming self-aware for the first time. And so it's like very simplistic, but hopefully very truthful little nuggets of thoughts.
Yeah, and I remember those were always weird to shoot because we'd shoot out the normal scene, and then at the end of the day you're like, okay, let's throw water on them. Okay, now let's knock everything over.
Yeah. Now Paul has to kiss Paul and then turn towards the camera as leaves fall.
Yeah.
Everyone on the set would just have to be like, okay.
Sure. Yeah, that was I think one of the things that and there's our bear attacking them. But yeah, those were the shots that most people on set didn't exactly understand what we were doing.
Buried deep in the mix is Daniel Radcliffe in the background, just like kind of whispering his thoughts as he's going. And so we had Daniel Radcliffe just say random stuff as he's watching the movie.
So like very distantly he's saying things like, what is this? That's so stupid. Why is he touching that heater?
What is this movie?
That was my favorite one, the model.
The model's pooping.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, if you go back, there was a model with little rabbit poos falling out of her butt. Jason didn't actually craft, you know, many of the props. You know, he had a team of folks, but that's one that Jason did.
That's my best work.
Yeah.
That's some more Hamer work right there. Oh, yeah. I think that was Ronnie the salamander. Yeah, coming out of the mouth.
Cameo from a salamander we found.
Yeah, it's like a few frames of a salamander. So this confuses some people the first time, but it's sort of like the spinning thing outside of the bus window, but instead it's the falling
sticks
leaves.
And branches.
Yeah.
This whole superpower of things flashing between their heads is definitely one of the less explained weirder things, but we kind of internally felt like it was a logical progression of like
the body and
survival
the
tools.
Yeah.
You eventually get to like, you get past water and shelter and food and get to like your mind, and like we called it telepathy.
Empathy, but telepathic empathy.
It's like Manny is just shooting thoughts and stealing thoughts with his brain.
Telepathy.
Telepathy.
Brain invents to survive. Yeah, like maybe your brain invented me.
And we did a lot of page one rewrites of this movie where we would kind of like reframe what Hank and Manny's personalities were like. But this scene is one of the only ones that like
it stuck around for the longest. Yeah.
It kind of, but it would switch who said what. Yeah. You know, but this idea of like shitting yourself and your cells shitting kind of became this like milestone where we're like, can we get the movie to that point? Because that's when like garbage and farts and loneliness kind of come to a synthesis, you know? So this was there for
the shit mixing with shit speech.
Yeah. Originally there was going to be a stop motion sequence of shit melting and squishing together and creating like life, the universe and everything out of poo poo.
Kind of like the scene from Noah where Aronofsky's Noah where he's talking about the creation of the world.
We cut wanted it. To do that. Yeah.
We didn't do it.
His fiance or wife now.
Oh yeah. Well, by the time this comes out, it'll be my wife. Yeah.
Kirsten was gonna do the stop motion for us, but we, you know, we were very careful. We didn't want to waste her time, you know, unless we knew we were gonna use it.
I love, wasn't one of the references for this Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah. Yeah.
Bambi,
yeah,
there were a couple. Wolf of Wall Street.
The bad guy from Men in Black.
Yeah.
With the cockroach inside him.
Some people ask what we did to Radcliffe in this. Like, did we have ropes and things like that? But
it's just 100% him.
It's just him. He's kind of a crazy body. He just can do a lot of odd things.
And he knew, like, this was his scene he was looking most forward to in the movie. Like, early on, he sent us videos of him in his apartment trying out this scene. Like, what's it look like to use your arm for the first time? But this was Kwan's idea to do the butterfly. Just a nice move.
And this fake fire he crawls across, this was our gaffer Matt Ardeen and the art department teamed up and built these fake embers for him to crawl through.
Yeah. It's pretty
what
great.
Did y'all call it? Fire pie?
Fire pie.
Yeah, fire pie.
Yeah, so we had to like dig a hole and bury this styrofoam lighting instrument.
That was a real
That's
gag
a
right there.
Stuntman on fire getting yanked and flipped through the air.
Yeah, Method did a good job of the Method Studios, the guys who did the effects did a good job of just cleaning up the stuff and making it like actually work somehow.
Yeah.
But a lot
just
of
weird things like Paul's hand there
had a glove on it.
Had a
yeah.
weird fat fingered glove, and so they went through and kind of just made his fingers smaller.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of our visual effects work is just doing it practically and then cleaning the shit out of it.
Yeah, just making it look a little better.
Yeah, making it work.
There was a deleted scene right here originally where Manny was going to like barf more water into Hank's mouth and be like, are you okay? Blah, blah, blah. But we, you know, we realized that like this movie had a lot of fake endings, you know, kind of like Return of the King. And we were like, we got to keep it rolling, you know. In the
Disney Ranch.
Yeah, now we're back in Los Angeles shooting on a back lot.
Wow. We had to bring in most of these trees and brush. It's kind of a semi-barren. There's our friend David Wilson's car that we borrowed. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Dave.
I don't think David's seen the movie yet, actually.
Because he's in London.
Yeah, sorry, England. You guys, hopefully it'll be out by the time this DVD comes out.
Hopefully you get to see it in theaters.
Yeah.
You will.
It's so much better in theaters. You gotta watch it with a bunch of strangers who have no idea what they're gonna watch. It's pretty fun.
Some of our favorite reviews are people talking about like watching it with someone who didn't like it as well as someone who loved it. Like being in a theater where like someone's losing their shit and someone else is groaning or
someone's walking out, whatever.
Yeah, or like going to the bathroom after the movie and someone like desperately trying to get someone to explain the movie to them. And be like, what was that? This song right here is Manchester Orchestra. That's the band that scored it.
Yeah, we just decided to use one of their songs.
Well, originally we were supposed to do the music video for that song, and we didn't get to because we got real busy and we made Turn Down for What instead.
Yeah, yeah, kind of.
And then as an apology, we hired them to score our movie. No.
I remember it was brutally hot this day.
Yeah.
Like 100 plus, just baking in the sun.
Everyone was dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Larkin was really struggling, like, how to light this scene. And then we came up with this idea of, like, what if Hank is in the shadows? You know, like, Manny's head creates a weird shadow. And it kind of, it's harsh, but, like, kind of works for what they're experiencing. They're in the harsh real world now. I just remembered a deleted scene we have to put in the movie.
Which one?
Or it's the behind the scenes. there's this girl, Chrissy, was like an incredible little child actor because she just always looked really judgmental and grumpy. And we cast her because like she just had this kind of like quality of like she's not overtly, like most little child actors are just like bubbly and friendly. But Chrissy was like, no, that's not her real name. Antonia's
going to judge these weirdos. Look at her judging.
But
yeah.
But the way we would shoot her is we would just feed her the lines and she would just, you know, she would say half of it and say like, I want goldfish. And we'd be like, no, say it again. So like there's a take with Mary Elizabeth Winstead where she had to say all of her lines as well as feed Chrissy her lines as well as say her lines. And it's just this 4 minutes of just like mind blowing, like, acting from Mary, where she's like, she's killing it with her lines, and then coaching Chrissy, and then helping Chrissy, and then helping her not cry, and then saying her line again.
That's like, it's kind of a schizophrenic way to act.
Yeah, it makes her look like a psycho, but it was a bummer how fleeting Mary's role is. But even in spite of that, she was like such a rock star, like such a pleasure to work with.
Don't cry, Hank.
Who are you?
It's okay.
What are you doing in my backyard?
He's a man and he used to be dead.
Shh, Chrissy, let mommy talk, okay?
He's lost in the world. He needs help.
What?
I think I saw, Antonia's mom post a picture where, like, Antonia went and saw this movie.
Yeah.
Which really scares me. Antonia's three or four. Maybe she didn't watch it all.
It's like a children's book, this movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's got some really good life lessons.
Wait here.
My 6-year-old son refers to this as the fart movie.
Has he seen it yet?
He says he's not allowed to watch it, even though I told him he is.
That's so funny.
He censored himself from this movie.
He's like, I'm not ready, Dad.
Yeah.
That's great. That's really cute.
Did you see the way she looked at me?
This is the moment where Manny learns to be ashamed of his love and his need to love and be loved. And it's all over.
Manny, don't be stupid. Please, don't tell Sarah how much I loved her.
There's so many little things that we put so much thought into that, like, just totally fade into the background when you make a movie. Like, Manny, when he caught himself on fire, ended up with crazy scars on his neck. But then we thought, like, he would cover those up, so he like tied fabric around his neck that's ripped out of the blanket. But like, I don't think anyone will ever get that. They'll just be like, oh, he has a weird kerchief for the last 10 minutes.
I like this moment where the sun leaves Manny's face and he doesn't blink. It's kind of really seals the deal.
Hard visual effect. That was one of the times when Daniel couldn't not blink.
Yeah.
And then right here's the first instrument, the piano.
Yeah, the first time you hear an instrument in the whole score, the real world is coming.
Gaffer Matt Ardine.
Yeah.
He has a cameo in a couple of our films.
He's also in Turn Down for What? He's the cop in Turn Down for What, actually.
Juice Box.
A little tie-in from the beginning. Yeah. Tells me he's
probably bridge jumping. And a lot of people have commented that, like, it's insane that Shane Carruth's in our movie. That right there talking is Shane Carruth, who made the films.
Yeah.
Upstream Color and Primer, and behind him is Andy Hult, the composer.
The guy with the big beard.
But Shane was just on set. He had friends. He was very good friends with one of our producers, Lawrence Ingley. So we were like, hey, if you're going to loiter around set, we're going to put you in our movie, damn it. Because you're a good actor.
Yeah, it was pretty stressful. He was on set to kind of watch how we worked, which is like pretty terrifying because we had never made a movie before.
And that's our stunt coordinator holding the phone, Jess Harbeck.
That's my Suburban, which was also in your Shins music video.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And the Tenacious D music video.
Oh, right, it's in the background driving off.
Yep.
He's trying to sneak it into everything.
Yeah.
And then a couple of Dan's friends from home called out the fact that this is Eastboro.
Eastboro on the thing.
On everything.
I grew up in Westboro, Massachusetts, and there is no Eastboro, Massachusetts. No. There's a Southboro, a Northboro, and a Westboro.
But they wouldn't let us use the name, and so then we had to misspell it on purpose.
legally. We spent an entire car ride just trying to come up with different ways to spell Eastboro wrong.
Yeah. One was it's spelled Eats Burrito, but it's pronounced Eastboro.
Or Yeast Bro.
Or Easy Bro.
Yeah,
Easy Brosa. we settled on EEST.
Yeah,
the same with the news van. I think we went through 10 or 15 different iterations.
We wanted
before
funny ones. Yeah. And couldn't do it.
Wound up with just blah.
Blah. You just gotta go blah sometimes.
Blah.
In the background, next to the street sign, is our other composer. He's just he's a out of focus person in the background.
And the street sign is Kisvarde Way. Yeah.
It's Kisvarde Way.
Jason Kisvarde Way.
Yeah, I remember. I said, "What street do they live on?" You said, "Jason, do whatever you want." And I did.
I believe in you.
No, I don't. Right into it. Your friends are gonna see you. Five, four. I remember there.
If you didn't notice, that was a oneer. Originally, the shot was even longer. We cut off the first minute because it was kind of lagging in the cut. But that was our big one take shot, one take scene.
We were K-Zut.
That's what we settled on. We're here with
Hank Thompson. We got the wrong aspect ratio for news. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, all you.
There's
you
never
nerds
been
out there.
An anamorphic news report, but it was too distracting to go. 69.
Yeah. I feel like we've gotten some shit for doing that in the Shins. Because Shins, we shot some of VHS and we put that also in anamorphic because the rest of the video was anamorphic.
Mm-hmm.
Those jerks.
Aspect ratios don't hurt anyone's feelings that matter. Sorry, losers.
I think she'd be happy somebody loves me.
Hank, that's a dead body. What are you, retarded?
Dad. Don't say that word.
Yeah, this movie's filled with things that we write and then feel like we shouldn't put in the movie. Like, you know, calling him retarded. But I guess that's the point of the movie. It's like...
Here we are back up in San Francisco, I think.
Yeah. My dad came to set and this was the first shot he saw.
Just Paul humping a dead
Paul
body.
Paul humping a dead body. And he's like, what kind of movie is my son making?
And we really did that. That was put a sled bottom on the bottom of one of those mats, and stunt team rode it down the side of the hill.
Yeah.
Bless you. And then it also, we had floating foam inside the thing, and you guys threw them in the river and said, all right, go for it. So this is really them swimming down the river.
Although there was like rumors of some sort of flesh-eating bacteria in the river that like... We were like, okay, just make sure it doesn't get in your eyes and don't drink it. Because, I mean, there were people around town swimming in it all the time, but
yeah.
When you have Paul, Dano, and Dan Radcliffe, you want to be extra careful. Originally, that sign of the dead raccoon was going to be something we found. We found something on Craigslist that Jason sent me. It was this incredible, like, chipmunk drinking alcohol while a raccoon cradled it like a baby. And we were like, buy it. And he got outbid.
Yeah, it was like outsider art taxidermy.
Yeah. You didn't tell me you got outbid. You just made a new one and never told me. And I was like, this looks different than the eBay one, Jason.
Someone wanted it more than us.
I feel weird like in commentary, like trying to defend my own movie, but I'm gonna... or just try to explain it. Like, some people have really struggled with, like, you know, how does this ending mean that, like, Paul and Daniel only went, like, were in her backyard the whole time? You know, did they not travel far at all? And we really struggled with it ourselves, but kind of settled on, like, wanting to make a movie that has emotional clarity and worrying less about... There was a version where we cut together trying to make time pass more. But ultimately, we kind of felt like landing in a gray area where it's like, you know, it's not a backyard, but it's also like they didn't travel 20 miles. Like, felt like enough clarity. In the end, we ended up spending tons of time just trying to cut the scene where it felt good and ignoring, you know, the math a little.
I like this last sequence because it's basically, it's the whole audience watching our movie. That's what's happening. We have our parents. We have normal people like the neighbors. We have a cop, authority figure. We have just a bunch of people watching our movie.
We have like a girl that we like people we respect and know, like watching it, you know? Yeah. Like Sarah's kind of like our, you know, someone we really care about her opinion kind of.
Coming up, this is the Apocalypse Now fart emulated after the helicopter scene in the opening of Apocalypse here. Fart. Also, one of the few real farts is where?
Oh, it was in the backyard, actually.
Yeah.
When Manny says, no, it's not gross, and then farts in front of Chrissy, that is Matt Hanum's butt. That's his real butt making that sound. Matt Hanum's our editor.
I did it.
Nobody likes him.
But yeah, when we heard people walked out of the movie for disliking it, one of the things I was most bummed is that they didn't get to see this scene where those people show up as characters, you know, the haters.
It's funny, we shot this on Daniel Radcliffe's birthday, and this is all he did all day. He just lied in the cold, wet ocean sand.
Yeah, having like waves crash into his eardrum.
Yeah.
And that being said, throughout the whole movie, just incredible trooper. And that was one of the reasons we built the dummies, is so that he wouldn't have to lay in the water and get thrown around, but he was happy to do it.
Yeah, and then for famous actors out there listening to our commentary, because there's so many of you, I don't think Daniel was even aware of this, but like him being such a trooper, like made the whole crew work twice as hard, you know? Like if Daniel Radcliffe, like millionaire superstar, is laying in the ocean on his birthday, like you can't complain about carrying the equipment back to the truck, you know? Like it's kind of cool.
And same thing, I mean, Paul also just, you know, nobody complained ever, and they got asked to do a lot of things.
The first rough cut of this movie, when we watched it all together, we put in the last song from The Lion King in here.
Because we didn't have a song yet. It was so funny, but it really ruined the movie.
Yeah, it's like kind of hilarious. Maybe we'll release a version with The Lion King under it, just because it's amazing. But
or just make it yourself, guys.
Yeah.
Someone put that on YouTube, because we can't afford it.
So now here's the question, where's the body going?
Jason's just trying to let me admit to you that the sequel is called Big Manny in Japani. It's Iron Man 2, Big Manny in Japani. It's Manny washing up on the shore in Japan, making friends with a bunch of Japanese schoolgirls and fighting giant monsters.
The end.
The end.
Like Battle Royale?
Yeah. Sure. No,
it's like a Godzilla.
Yeah, Godzilla.
Kinda,
yeah, I'd watch that movie.
He'll get a superpower where he grows huge, like, because he's allergic to raw fish, and so when he eats it, he grows like 100 times his size, and then he can fight monsters kaiju style.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Do people in commentary talk during the credits?
I don't think so.
We should, though.
Yeah, we make fun of people.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Frickin'
guy.
Todd.
Frickin' Todd.
Todd King is our
hot toddy.
Hot toddy and frickin' Todd were Todd King's names.
Yeah. This is the song that we were talking about when we sent over the script to the composers. They literally recorded this exact recording and sent it over the next day.
And we were like, you're hired.
This is going to be great. Hammer time. So that's Andy and Robert. They were the composers. And they're also part of an amazing band, Manchester Orchestra, who we did a music video for a few years ago.
And Bad Books. And Right Away, Great Captain.
I know, yeah. And all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People have asked us, like, who's the most underappreciated person on set? And for this movie, it was
Jesse Fleece, and first assistant director.
The AD team, because, like, scheduling this movie was so hard, you know, like, so many scenes were, like, split into three different cities. And
Jess Harbeck was our stunt coordinator, and she's one of the only female ones, but she's such a special kind of enthusiastic collaborator, so it was really amazing to get to work with her.
Yeah, and she was able to like call in favors from the stunt community and then give us favors when all we needed was just someone supervising. She literally came every day, which was great. She could just kind of make Paul and Daniel feel comfortable. There's those on-set audio ding-dongs. Steve Kirby and Iris, they were incredible.
Ding-dongs.
Ding-dongs is a compliment.
Yeah. I love our PAs. Such a good fun group.
Yeah. It was kind of cool. One of the reasons we wrote the movie was because we wanted it to be like summer camp. We were like, we'll go out in the woods with friends. And on a lot of days, Dan and I weren't having fun, but everybody else was. You know, yeah. We'd go and get stressed out in a corner, but that vibe was great.
It's leaving. All of you guys. Everyone. Kelsey Ronnie Mellon.
Actually, Sophie Kosofsky?
That's how you say it, sure.
Yeah, she was the production designer for... our Manchester Orchestra music video that we did a long time ago, and we decided to pull her on because she was so great. She worked on Beasts of the Southern Wild as well, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah,
as did Stephanie, our costume.
Yeah,
yeah.
And Sam, who was also in the art department, worked on Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that. Makes
they
sense.
They were friends from out.
Just want to call out Steve Behrens, the bear trainer. Also Steve Martin, not that Steve Martin.
No, he was.
Oh yeah, that Steve Martin. Thank you.
There's our Humboldt production assistants who are all awesome.
Oh, those guys were great.
They had just finished shooting like an all night shoots horror film, and they were like so happy to be PAing during the daytime. Yeah. They were great.
Just want to know that that's the only fartist credit in film history.
Fartist.
Also, Jacob Young Thor Flack.
That's his name
movie.
Against his will.
Yeah, this is his first movie, so now I think forever on IMDb it's going to be Young Thor.
Brent just thinks he looks like Thor, so that's his name.
He cut his hair. He got a girlfriend and cut his hair.
No.
Loser. Hire him.
Now
if
he just
you're
looks like Chris Hemsworth. Young Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, Chris parentheses Hemsworth. There you go.
Yeah.
We had, like Dan said, Method Studios do a lot of the visual effects. They did a lot of the hardest ones. And they're kind of partnered with Company 3, who did the color. But then we did a lot of like blinks and easy effects. And then Kirsten, who showed up a second ago, came in and helped and did like 30 effects as well. So she got a bunch of thank yous.
Kirsten's the most credited person in the movie.
She's got more credits, than anyone. There's my dog up there.
We have a long list of thank yous just because we went through the Sundance Labs and there were so many people that we met there that like...
inspired the film and helped the film.
Yeah, we couldn't even list them all off because it would have just taken forever.
This song you're listening to, Eastside Camera Rentals, give us so many cameras, they're great, is a unused score that was going to be in the backyard scene. Andy and Rob made this song and we tried it out, and then we were really struggling with that scene where Hank is looking around the Eastboro van and stuff, so we stuck it in the credits.
Oh, look at that. There's unbridled sound.
Unbridled.
Wow, what's that?
Who are they, Brent?
It's a rad little place in Echo Park. No big deal.
Oh, chill. Are we there right now?
Right now.
It's pretty cool.
I can't believe we went through the entire credit sequence.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about, right?
I guess so.
Blackbird is Lawrence Ingley's company, our producer.
He's the one who made us sit down and write the script for the first
time. Yeah, when we first met him, we pitched him the movie as
a
joke.
Yeah.
And he was like, do you really want to make that? And we were like, yeah. And he's like, well, why aren't you writing it? And he just guilt tripped us into writing it. So
there we
thanks
go.
So much, Larry.
Thank you everyone for watching. I hope this was
You got cut off.
That's
no, maybe
over.
Not. Oh, you didn't. A24 still going.
Oh, you're still here.
At the end when Manny gets whispered into his ear.
Oh, what Paul says
is he says, oh.